Well, greetings and welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, but more importantly, with Tim Kearns, who is our ambassador of goodwill here at MSO, as well as our sports analyst. So let's welcome on Tim, and then we'll tell you what we got scheduled for tonight. How you doing, Tim?
Good evening, Rick. How are you?
Very well, very well. Good news with the Patriots. You know what's funny, Tim? And I knew this was going to happen. I'm watching, not watching, but I'm just kind of perusing the sports channels, you know, to see what they have to say. And it's just amazing how negative everybody is. Then I watch one local guy, now I won't mention the channel, but he's replaced one of the all-time greats. And he just follows along. He just, you know, there's no original thought there. And it's, this, that, and the other thing. And to me, you know, I was driving home yesterday. I knew this. I didn't see the game, but I knew the score. And I said, you know what? I don't care how they played. They won. And over the years, I think people have forgotten, even during Brady's years, how close and how lucky some of those games turned out to be.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you look at the Bucs this year, and, you know, Mr. Brady is struggling. The team is struggling. And he's throwing the pads, the computers around now because he's so frustrated. And I saw a reminder. He was 4-5 in his last 9 games with the Pats.
Yep.
So it wasn't the all encompassing. When they had a full load of offensive and defensive and special team players, they were good, and his star shined the brightest. And he did display magic. There's no doubt about that. But it was always, as Bill always said, it's a team effort.
Yeah, and I think, and that's my point. I mean, you know, the team played well enough yesterday without any superstars at the moment to win. And that's all I cared about. I say, hey, this is good. The Patriots won. They beat Pittsburgh. Anytime you beat Pittsburgh, that's great.
Listen, Pittsburgh historically has been a very tough game for them. You know, and Three Rivers has always been a tough place to play.
Mm-hmm.
Any team, let alone the Patriots.
Well, Three Rivers is like before Heinz, and Heinz is gone now, too. So I don't know what the name of the place is now. Ah, goodness. Listen, Coach, we have Dan O'Connor coming up in a little while. He's the Gloucester High School football coach, and they are playing someplace called Weston this week. They broke through in the win column big time this past weekend against Chelsea, and so we'll be talking to Coach O'Connor about that high-powered offense that showed up on Friday as they beat Chelsea 43-8. Our game, Danvers looked very strong on defense, beating Haverhill 21-16. And, of course, Marblehead squeezed out a win. Beverly was in the game there, but North Andover, even though they were, by many accounts, outplayed by Beverly, beat Beverly 35-21. So some really interesting high school scores over the weekend.
Yeah, I went to the Beverly game, and it had to be very, very frustrating game for Coach Hutton and his staff, as the defense played well in spots. The offense just kept giving it away, you know, and this is how bad it was. The quarterback went to throw the ball away. He was being chased, went to throw the ball away, and he threw it low, but a defensive lineman was right there and picked it off.
Hmm.
And it was like, oh my God. You know, everybody was like, what is going on here? And, fumbles, mishandle, oh my God. You name it, it happened to Beverly last week. That's one of those, you just gotta put it behind you, strap on the pads and the helmet and go after
yeah.
it next week.
Well, the other thing too, Tim, is, I was reminded quite starkly this weekend about, how football coaches, teachers in general and coaches, our life coaches as well, because two horrible stories, one coming out of Swampscott, the other coming out of Marblehead. Each team has a young man on their team who lost a dad during the week, and I can't even fathom that. To, just, you know, we were teachers, and to have a high school kid lose a parent is just it's just awful. It's horrible.
Yeah, at Marblehead it was junior Jake Scoglin, and his dad, only 46 years old, very active in the Marblehead sports community, coaching many many players in youth football and baseball. He was working out, and he passed away. But his son played, and I heard he had a heck of a game. And then for the Big Blue and Swampskit, it was quarterback Zach Ryan. His father passed away early in the week, succumbing to a battle with cancer. And you know, Ryan threw for 127 yards, threw for two touchdowns, and sometimes the game serves as a bit of a distraction for you, while at the same time really putting a focus on what your dad meant, all of his support, and you just want to come out there and you literally want to play your ass off in your dad's memory. And I think that's what both of these young men did.
And so
our deepest condolences
absolutely
to them and their families at this horrible time.
And from what I understand is all the teams, all four teams involved with the two games this weekend, all of the kids were moved to support the kids who lost their dads before and after the games. And, you know, that's what sportsmanship is all about. But, certainly, you know, best wishes to both families that they can somehow think of the lost one and have a smile on their face when they do after things settle down. Because you want to try to remember the good times, but man, that stuff comes back to kick you right in the you know where sometimes. The teammates have been so supportive as well. And for Marblehead, man, that's the second thing that's happened in the last 6 or 7 months when they lost a former player over the winter in a tragic accident. So it just reminds you of you know how you can get really something I don't know what the word is, some kind of camaraderie out of sports. You can make friends and who are lifelong friends when you don't even know it's happening at the time because of whatever. So best of luck to both of those kids.
Exactly. And you know, they're two smaller communities. The smaller communities tend to really rally around the flag, so to speak.
Yeah.
And they'll receive a lot of emotional support.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope that they have great support because you need it. Everybody needs it at one time or another. So, you know, best to them. Had to mention that because I think there are probably some sports fans in the area who don't know about that, and they ought to. We do have Dan O'Connor coming up in just a few minutes here to talk about Gloucester High School football and, you know, one of the biggest offensive outputs they've had in a long, long time. We also will be talking with both Gary Larrabee and Mike Grenier. Each of them will be talking about his interest. Of course, with Gary in particular, it will be golf, and with Mike, it'll be basketball. But they're also each going to tell us about their Mount Rushmore of interviewees. And I copied that Mount Rushmore thing from the Salem News when they did it a few weeks ago about you know, who's the Mount Rushmore of North Shore sports in different categories. So we're going to do that as well with both Gary and Mike, and I'm looking forward to that. Coach, any other random thoughts about sports?
Well, if you consider Wheel of Fortune a sport, Pat Sajak has just announced his retirement.
And a lot of people are happy about that. I guess he was seen with Lauren Brobert, whatever her name is, and he's very, very far out there with the Marjorie Taylor Greene conspiracies and stuff like that. And fortunately, I didn't know that until yesterday, because I do like watching that show. So, a lot of people have been saying, okay, he's almost 80 years old, for heaven's sakes.
Well, about time he retired.
Well, you know, it is and it isn't. If you can keep doing it, good luck. But, you know, he certainly has earned his stripes. He's earned his retirement, no question. I mean, he's one of the longest running MCs of all time, I would think. So, okay, well, thank you for that little gem. And I don't know that it's sports, but I imagine people bet on everything. Do you ever go to a game, Tim, like a Super Bowl party, and everybody there just starts betting silly, like who's going to get the first down, or who's going to be the first player to spit, or this, that. Do you ever do that?
No, none of my friends have enough money for that stuff.
Oh, we would nickel dime. I mean, come on, you know. But in fact, the only time I ever did it was 1986. Was that when they played the Bears?
Yeah,
that was the one. And I had a Super Bowl party at my house, the first and only. The game was so out of hand, we decided, okay, let's put a nickel up for that or a dime up for this, and just to try to keep the interest up there. Okay, Tim, why don't we take a break? We'll see if we can get a hold of Coach O'Connor. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. That's Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Poposky. Bill Newell is the anchor. He's lining up many more interviews and all kinds of great stuff for us again this week. Many informative post on the website already this week, and we invite you to take a look at our post on the situation in Essex. That's all been cleared up now, and apparently what was thought to be an explosive device near Chebacco Lake and one of the houses there was an explosive device, and they had to evacuate upwards of six houses. And as it turns out, it was an old piece of ordnance. Apparently it was an old mortar shell that the state police successfully handled and took away and took it away safely. So all those who were evacuated are back now safe. And according to our talk with Chief Paul Francis, there's no threat to the community, nothing like that, and everybody's safe. But I don't know if you know Trooper Tim Sove, Tim, who lives down the street from me. And last I heard, he was on the bomb squad, which scares the bejeebers out of me. But great work by both the Essex Police and Fire, and of course the Massachusetts State Police Bomb Squad. Nobody got hurt. So all of that's up there on the website. All the updates are there, and you can check that out. So we're going to take a break, and we'll come back in with Dan O'Connor, the Gloucester High School football coach, as this is North Shore Sports Night.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, we're back now live with
Gloucester
High School football coach Tim O'Connor. Tim O'Connor. That's Tim Kearns and Dan O'Connor. Put them together. You get Tim O'Connor, which is also a coach somewhere. Coach, how are you?
Doing well, gentlemen. How are you all?
Couldn't be better. Couldn't be better. Life is good. All right, let's get to it. Dan, I want to start right away with the offense, and Tim and I switch back and forth here. One asks the question, and we go back and forth. I got to start with the offense. This is the biggest offensive output you've had in a while. How come? What changed? What happened that was good?
Well, it started up front. You know, I thought our offensive line played a fantastic game. They got pushed pretty much all night long. And the kids executed. You know, Nick Carey went 5 for 5 last night, or on Friday. Was very efficient in the things that he did, picked the open receivers when they were there. And just overall, I thought our backs ran hard. It also helps when you score on defense and on special teams, which we did. So anytime you get a contribution there to put points on the board, it makes the offense look a little bit better.
Tim?
Dan, did you tweak the offensive game plan any that gave Chelsea some different looks other than what they would have seen on the film?
No, not really. You know, it's all based stuff that we've been trying to run here for the last couple of years. I thought execution was the biggest part. We executed really well, again, up front. And when we got to the outside, our receivers were making blocks. It's just our biggest thing, no matter what, is always how well we play. We focus on ourselves and doing what we want to do, and Friday night the kids came out and did that.
Tell me about your line, if you would, Dan. They never get enough credit. We never hear enough about linemen.
Yeah, I mean, we got some kids, that all five kids that started for us have started games the last couple of years. You know, Michael and Jaden Toppin are three-year starters for us on the offensive line. Evan Mione is a sophomore this year, started a bunch of games last year as a freshman. Christian Howell, he's a big kid. He came in here last year as a transfer student, been playing offensive tackle last year. He's been a monster up front. And Brian Swain, our senior captain, on the other tackle, he's just one of the smartest football players we have on the team, one of the hardworking kids that we have. So those guys, they're playing together a lot. They're hanging out together outside of football. They spent a lot of time together during the summer, and that builds continuity and that builds a trust and an understanding. Mm-hmm. So they've been great. And, you know, we've got some guys in reserve that are playing hard as well when they get their chances, and we're looking forward to that continuing.
Dan, has there been a revival of the off-season conditioning program that Mike used to lead? Has there been any, again, resurrection of that? Because you know personally the benefits that provided for the team over a very long period.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Mike was able to come back with us this summer and work with the kids. And not only physically, but the mental anguish that he puts you through in a good way. And you learn to fight through things. You learn to fight together as a team. You build a lot of camaraderie. And there's something to his program that has benefited so many athletes and so many teams along the way. And we're starting to see that a little bit here this year with these kids.
Dan, you've been on the other end of some of these running time situations. What did it feel like for you personally this time where you built up a lead where you got running time and you were also able to get some of your younger kids in?
Yeah, we got them all in. You know, it's a testament to our older kids. You know, they were out at halftime. We started the half and we kept the offensive line in together to give some younger kids some runs behind an experienced offensive line, but also for a little bit of conditioning on our linemen's part. Anytime you can empty the bench, it's a great, great feeling. And for the first home game, we had a fantastic crowd down here. There was some excitement. And to get every kid who dressed into the game, we got a freshman in the end zone, which is something you always wanted to do. It's a great, great experience for them in their first home high school football game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to go back to Mike and talking about the mental aspect, which is like you said, it's such a critical part. The physical is one thing, but when you really got to dig down deep, it's the mental part that has to sustain you. I remember, you know, throughout the time that you were the high school you were playing and Jimmy Eunice and those guys, and they were doing those workouts with Mike, and all they would talk about how he drove them and made them not stop, not give in, not quit, and that's the mental part. And you could always see that in the game that you guys played, because in the fourth quarter, when the game was on the line, Gloucester had it both physically and mentally over the opposition in 99% of the games.
Mike's got a great way with words, and you know he minces none of them when he talks about the things that we're doing. You know, he doesn't allow you to take shortcuts. And you learn that as you're going through things, that things are going to be difficult, and you got to rely on trust in your own ability and trust in the abilities of everybody else. And that's something that Gloucester football has always prided itself on, Tim. As you mentioned, fourth quarter teams, beating teams when they wear down, wearing other teams out. And there's a mentality to that. It's not just physical, and like you mentioned, and the trust in yourself. And our kids starting to trust in themselves a little bit and realize that they can do these things and they can fight through adversity. And that's a lesson that not only do you learn during the football game, but outside of football as well. It's going to carry you through.
You know, Coach, one of the things I saw as a thread this weekend, especially in teams that ended up on the short end of the score, was mistakes. And they were mistakes that generally you see in the first week. You get those ironed out. You don't see them so much as the season goes on. But tell me about how efficient your team was in this first, in this second game, because you know, the first week you got the offsides, you got the guys being in the wrong places and things like that. How'd you guys make out?
Yeah, we were better. You know, we were better in that aspect of the game. We went in the mental battle, and that's really what it is a lot of these times, is if, as physical fatigue sets in, if you allow your mentals to slip, you know, that's where mistakes happen. That's where, you know, the offsides, penalties, the different things, the lapse in coverage, the missed opportunities. We were better, you know, we're still not great. We're still all working there. Remember, these are high school kids, but we were good. We haven't turned the ball over, knock on wood, so
okay.
Keep that going.
You know, Dan Bauer used to, when I interviewed him, would always say what he looked for was improvement game after game after game after game. So you've seen improvement, obviously, from week one to week two. What level of improvement do you expect to see this coming week?
Just continue with the execution, you know, continue with our communication, and continue to play good football. And, you know, we're playing a really good Western team. They got some athletes on the field. And, you know, we feel like if we're able to execute and do the things that we want to do, and the biggest thing is communicate and getting all 11 guys to be on the same page, then that's what we're looking for each and every week.
Tim and I were talking about the game we saw this past weekend, and for 2 weeks in a row now, we've seen two teams primarily in the spread offense. And boy, has the game slowed down. Have you found that yet? Because you guys, you do multiple, but you're still pretty much a ground team.
Yeah, we're running the, you know, we still want to run the ball. You know, the formations be what they are, but we still want to run the ball. We feel like that's the best key for our team's success.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a good offensive line, but, you know, a different team, if you, incomplete passes slow the game down. And, you know, we want to try to keep the game going. We feel like we're conditioned enough to be there and to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You waiting on me, Rick?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's your turn.
Oh. Yeah, what year is this for you? What number?
This is my fourth season.
Fourth season. Jeez. Somebody's getting old here, and it's not me.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I know. We're already there. We're not getting old. We already are old, so.
I know. It's crazy to think, you know, when I took this job, you know, that this group of seniors, they were the freshmen when I started.
Dan, I got a, I guess, final thought, and then I'll let Tim take it over. But around the conference, you know, your first three games, everybody's pretty much playing out of league, except I'm looking at Salem. And that can't be right, that Salem is 2-0 in the league. I don't think that's correct.
No, not in the league. Salem's 2-0.
Right.
They played the same Chelsea team we played.
Okay.
We played them week one.
Yep.
Last week they hosted Martha's Vineyard, had a really good convincing win.
Right.
And then this week they play another out-of-conference game.
All right, and so far, I know you got to keep an eye on the other schools because you're going to be, you know, playing against some of them, but, to me, is there a surprise? You know, Marblehead is expected to be good and everything else, but it looks to me like Peabody has jumped off to a really great start.
Yeah, no surprise there. Shea Lynch is their returning quarterback, is a fantastic athlete. Mark Betancourt's got a great program going over there. I wouldn't say there's any surprises. I think we're all looking to execute early on and to play well off the get-go, and a lot of teams in the conference have done that.
Mm-hmm. Coach, some final thoughts for Coach O'Connor?
Let's see. Now, I think we've covered it all, Rick. I know I want to wish Dan the best of luck. I've known Dan a long time. Dan, how's the family?
Everyone's doing well. You know, I got my oldest is in the middle school this year. I got my middle son is in second grade at West Parish, and we got a little two-year-old running around giving everybody a run for his money.
Hey, I think one more thing I could ask you, Dan, is tell me about your assistants this year. Who's on the staff?
Yeah, you know, we return a lot of assistants. Paul Hickey coaches our running backs, our linebackers. He's a veteran coach. Been a head coach up in New Hampshire. He's been on our staff here in Gloucester for the last 5-6 years. Brian Anderson returns after taking a couple years off due to work conflict. He's a great defensive mind. He runs our defense. Drew Shares is running our offense this year with John Fosbury had to step away with family commitment.
Mm-hmm.
So Drew steps in and has been running the offense for us. And we supplement that. We have Craig Bren and Max Quirk, who are running the JV program right now. I'm down here at the game as they're playing. And Kyle Lucido's jumped on board and is helping out when he can. Fantastic athlete with his time here in Gloucester. And lucky to have him.
Yeah, familiar names. All right, Gloucester at Weston. That's a 7 o'clock start on Friday?
Yes, sir. Yes.
All right, and where is Weston?
To my knowledge, it's the first exit when you hit the Mass Pike heading west.
Oh, okay. All right, just went by there. My daughter just moved to Bridgewater, so I'm...
Take Route 22 if you haven't driven that far down 128.
Okay, very good. Coach... go to your room, Tim, for heaven's sakes. Jeepers.
Only if you're on the Harley, though, right, Tim?
No, I'm anymore, Dan.
He had to put that to bed, Dan. That's
better, oh, boy.
That's a better of me.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much. We really appreciate your taking the time. Congratulations on the good win, and best of luck this week.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Dan. Take care.
Dan. All right.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye. That is Gloucester High School football coach Dan O'Connor, and... Geez, Coach, you're right. I mean, you know, how long ago did we have him? My Lord. And now he's got a kid in middle school.
He was the captain of my 03 baseball team, I believe.
03, okay. All right, so I'm doing the math here. Let's see, 19 is 18. Okay, all right, I got an idea of what his age is now. Yeah, okay. All right, so... this is North Shore Sports Night. We'll take a break. Again, I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, working on some ideas to simplify and brighten the website and get even more traffic. And speaking of traffic, thank you so much for all the traffic we've been getting. Don't forget, we have the North Shore Sports Writers coming up this week, and we've got the Sports Desk, the North Shore Sports Desk with Nick and Nick, and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk with Nick and Nick, and those will be posted toward the end of the week. Great listing there, great information about mostly high school sports, but all kinds of good stuff. So we'll take our break here and then come back with Gary Larrabee. You're listening to MSO News Sports. I'll be right back, and so will Tim.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore, a real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Gary Larrabee, a sports historian, golf writer, and all-around good guy, along with the wise guy, Tim Kearns. And Gary, welcome back.
Great to be back with you, as always, Richard.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Ooh, the Richard. The formality. That's good. We're getting a little, I think we're getting some rain here finally at the end of golf season here on the North Shore, but... Where do you want to start tonight, Gary? Because I have to tell people that we're also going to go to our Mount Rushmore of interviewees with both you and Mike tonight, so I'm looking forward to that. But we have to do business first, so where do we start?
I think we start with what happened on the tours yesterday, and I'm sure Tim was watching or very much being aware of it, even though we had a wonderful day for our Patriots fans. Very unusual developments at... The PGA Tour event, they started their fall campaign, their fall season, if you will, out in California, out in wine country in Napa, and a very, very bizarre finish on that home green yesterday, Tim, if you saw it, where Max Homa was trailing by a shot coming down to the last hole. He chips in from 35 feet or thereabouts on the last hole. And then playing right behind him, Danny Willett, the fellow from the UK who was came out of nowhere to win the Masters about, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. He simply needs the two putt to get into a playoff or make a putt from 4 feet to win the tournament. And he three putts from 4 feet, something I can do, but he should never do. cost him the tournament. He hands it over to Max Homa. And a very bizarre finish, but a very exciting finish, Tim.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure the people who were surrounding the 18th green stood there slack-jawed as they watched this unfold. As you said, that's a four-putt out closeout, that is something that I've done numerous times. You know, I got my 10,000 steps on a green one time.
What are the odds, Tim? What are the odds that you will see in the last couple groups, you'll see a 33-foot chip in for birdie and a three-putt from inside 4 feet?
Oh, man. So it's one of those. Now I've seen it all, and you've seen it all in like 10 minutes. You know, that's such a tremendous case of the yips that did that. Did Homer's birdie upset him that much that he lost all focus and the adrenaline just surged through him that he couldn't control the putter?
Well, he's been there before. He won them, like I said, he won the Masters. So it's not like he can't handle the pressure, but it'll probably never happen again in our lifetime of watching these tour events. Maybe it will happen next week at the President's Cup down in North Carolina, who knows, but to see it yesterday, really something I think I've never seen before, and combination chip in from 35 feet, 33 feet, and a three-putt from under 4 feet, my oh my, golf can still give us some very strange finishes.
That is true, and you know, that's why you make a putt them off. You don't give anybody anything. Keep hitting it, pal, you know.
Very good point. And of course, the next interesting, I think, development from yesterday was not so much that Cameron Smith, another foreigner, if you will, from Australia, who won the Open Championship in July, he wins the LIV tournament out in outside Chicago. But for me, the big story of the day was Peter Uihlein, Massachusetts' own Peter Uihlein, finishing tied for second with Dustin Johnson to make a cool $1.8 million. A very good day for Peter Uihlein, of all people, on the LIV Tour.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe that's what it's designed for. The guys that didn't want a whole lot of money, you know, can now win a lot of money. I don't know. I honestly paid no attention to the LIV. Really don't.
Oh, come on. Get a life. Anyways, the interesting part of the story is, of course, that everyone thinks that Uihlein got his position on the LIV Tour because of his father, who was the retired chairman of Titleist Golf, Wally Uihlein from Haverhill. But Peter, after struggling in the first few tournaments out there, he didn't play very well here in the International either when they had it here the Labor Day weekend, but there he goes, tying Dustin Johnson for second place, winning almost $2 million. I don't know what he got for a guarantee to join the tour in the first place, but things are certainly looking up for Peter Uihlein, and you have to give him credit and be happy for him.
Well, yeah, I'm not into him. It's just, live without it.
Oh, geez. Boo.
Keep in mind, guys, keep in mind that Peter Uihlein does not need the money. We have to believe he's going to have a nice, nice trust fund set up. Maybe it's already been set up from his father, who made gazillions making Titleist or continuing to retain the number one position in golf balls and golf equipment. But that's for another time when down the road. Anyways, you know, people were asking me about the LPGA tournament yesterday. Who cares about what happened yesterday in the LPGA?
Wait a minute, Derek. I want to look it up. An American won. How can you not be excited about that?
Well, Andrea Lee, I have a couple of old girlfriends named Andrea, so I guess we should be happy. And she did make 5 birdies on the back 9. So, okay, you set me up. Good for Andrea Lee. Good for an American. Which is a very big story in its own right. But now we have the countdown this week, guys, for the President's Cup being held at Quail Hollow down outside Charlotte. Who's really interested in the President's Cup this time around, Tim?
You know, I haven't seen a whole lot leading up to it. So there's been no big publicizing of it. So I'm not even sure a lot of people are aware that it's even going to be played.
Maybe just the people in North Carolina. At least they're playing it during the football season and not the basketball season down there. It might not draw flies, but I have very little interest in it. You know, the Ryder Cup is next year, which we are interested in, over in Rome, I believe, next year. Is that right, Tim? Is it Rome or is it Paris? I get those two beautiful cities confused.
It's a case of pick your poison, you know?
Yeah, I think it's outside Rome. I think it's Italy next year. So that'll get me interested. But the President's Cup, boy, it's just another money maker. So I have no too much interest. And anyways, it's great to see some bizarre happenings at the out in California. We're still playing a lot of golf around here for another month and a half, hopefully. And we've still got a lot to look forward to if you're a player. I'm not so sure how much there's to look forward to if you're just watching it on TV, but still lots of fun to talk about golf, guys.
Absolutely. And, as you say, man, you never know what's going to happen in sports. It's just when you think you've seen it all, something weird comes up. Oh, my goodness. Now, Gary, I asked you and Mike to come up with a Mount Rushmore moment in your career in terms of an interviewee, and you have waxed poetically many times about Atlanta, not Atlanta, excuse me, but the Masters and Augusta National. Where'd you decide to take us this time?
Well, this has nothing to do with the Masters, but as much fun as that was, but I've had the good fortune of having 2 one-on-one interviews over the years here in the greater Boston area, one with Arnold Palmer out of Marlboro Country when they were first promoting the PGA Senior Tour, now called the Champions Tour. And Arnold was nice enough to give me 15 minutes of one-on-one time when he didn't have to at Marlboro Country Club before they held the first event out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just, you know, you find out about these big-name golfers. You find out about them when you get them alone. And in this case, I had a wonderful time with Arnold. He was going to give me as much time as I wanted. I may have discussed this before, but I'll never stop talking about it because of the graciousness and the courtesy and the kindness that he gave an unknown, basically, to him, golf writer, way back in 1980, guys, 42 years ago, in the clubhouse at Marlboro Country Club. That's Arnold Palmer. That's the Arnold Palmer I knew. And, of course, I have to put in the same level Gary Player. Gary played a corporate outing for SAP at Liturnia Hill about, I don't know, 12, 15 years ago. And I was the only one out there to talk to him after he finished his round with all these different hot shots from SAP. But I asked if he could give me a few minutes before he leaves to go back into Boston for the big dinner they had that night. And he said, Gary, I'll give you all the time you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go in and have a beverage inside the clubhouse, just me and him sitting on a couch together. He gave me, with his limousine outside waiting, he gave me 35, 40 minutes. Didn't have to do that, but that's the kind of person Gary Player is in real life. And I'll never forget it. Wonderful experience.
That is fantastic, because I remember I've mentioned this many times, but John Ahern of the Boston Globe, when I first started the radio station at WESX, he was covering the Marblehead yacht races, and they sent me over there to do that, which was talk about being out of my element. And John was the most gracious. He bought dinner. I mean, he was just amazing. And as you say, it's something that they don't have to do. But I think a question I would have, Gary, when you meet someone like Arnold Palmer, because you've been doing it for a while, but do you get butterflies? Do you get a little nervous? Once you get into it, it's okay. But do you first have this little feeling of, okay, this is Arnold Palmer?
Well, when it was 1980, and I'd only been at the Salem News for 6 or 7 years, but I had been at the Masters by that time.
Okay,
So that kind of eliminated the butterflies, but the fact remained, you wonder if he'd give me 5 minutes or 15 or 20 minutes, and basically gave me all the time I asked for, and he would have given me more if I needed it. Just a real, genuine person, and I know you've read about the same things with Gary Player, and the two best I've ever interviewed in the golf world.
That's awesome. That's what I'm talking about. Tim, any final comments for Mr. Larrabee?
No, you can't talk Gary Player and Arnold Palmer, so I'm not even
going to. No, you can't. There's no way. All right, Gary, column this week. What's coming up in the Salem News?
Well, we talked about it last week, and we'll talk about it again today because it got bumped a couple times last week.
Okay.
Supposed to appear this week. Still telling us about Peabody's Brian Hamilton and his new career in golf. He's now 70 years old, but he had a great career as a club pro at Concord Country Club in New Hampshire, at Eastwood Hall down on Cape Cod, and now he's becoming a relatively prominent and very much admired and sought-after rules official, first on the New England PGA Tour and now with the PGA of America. And we'll share that wonderful experience that Brian's having right now with my readers.
All right. Looking forward to it, Gary. We'll see you again next Monday night.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, Gary. Take care.
Thanks, Gary.
That is Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. I don't know, Tim. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I get to interview some of my science heroes every now and then, and I still get the butterflies. But it's so great to hear that those two guys, Gary Player, Arnold Palmer, that project to be nice people really are.
Yeah, and I've seen a special on Gary Player, and you know there's always the sit down part where they sit down with the host, and he just there's nothing phony about Gary Player. He is who he is, and he loves to express himself.
That's awesome. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get Mike's opinion on his Mount Rushmore coming up in just a few minutes here. But first we're going to talk some basketball. And I heard some names. I know one of them he mentioned last week that was signed by the Celtics to the big league contract, I believe. Two-way, one-way, whatever it's called. So we'll have to get caught up on that. Mike was trying to mention not fringe guys, but guys who could add depth to the Celtics last week. And we'll have to get an update on that. In the meantime, we need to take a break, get caught up on stuff, and we'll be right back.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, executive sports writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, we are all back. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns, and we have brought in Mike Grenier. And Mike, of course, we've been focusing on Celtics these past few months, and I want to start right there. The only name I recognized this week about signing contracts or whatever of the people you mentioned last week was a kid named Valentine?
Denzel Valentine, yes, 5 or 6 years in the league, had a couple of good years with the Chicago Bulls, definitely would add veteran depth to their bench and a guy who can score a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, like we talked last week about adding quality depth, Rick and Tim, and I think that's what Brad Stevens has come in really with high marks in the off season here, you know, adding obviously, Danilo Gallinari, who's going to be out. However, you know, obviously they have Malcolm Brogdon, and they still have Grant Williams, and they have Sam Hauser, who's going to contribute. They still have Peyton Pritchard, who could probably play a much bigger role this coming season. So they have some quality depth, and I think that's going to enable them to make a strong run at the Eastern Conference Championship and perhaps get into the finals again. So obviously, you know, sometimes we overlook the core of the team, which is really, you know, we're talking the two big guns, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, both really kind of going into their peak years now. Although, how can we say that about Jason Tatum, right, Ricky? He's 24 years old, and he's heading into his, like, sixth year.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's been around a while.
Yeah, he's been around a while.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Of course, Jaylen Brown, just a year older, and you know, they both average in the mid-20s in points. I mean, Tatum, 27 points a game last season, and he played 76 games, so he's durable. And Jaylen Brown has the same kind of history. So we're looking at some really terrific talent, frontline talent, and then obviously backup talent. Mm-hmm. So I'm ready. Hey, it's amazing, Rick. They start the preseason a week from Sunday. So we're talking a week from Sunday, and they only have 3 or 4 preseason games, and they get right into it on October 18th against the Philadelphia 76ers. That's the opening game. So it really is right around the corner.
Mike, you mentioned they only have 3 or 4 preseason games?
Correct. Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, I'm thinking about the, you know, the NFL, the players' complaints, and now they're down to 3 preseason games.
Right.
And the first couple of weeks, it looks like they've only had 3 preseason games.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
The lack of continuity, the lack of execution.
The injuries.
The number of penalties. They just haven't had time, and because of the other restrictions on practices and practicing with pads and 2-a-days, and you can't have those, and you can't do this, and wait, I got to blow my nose.
Yep.
You know, the players just don't play as well. And if the preseason in the NBA is only going to be 4 games,
right?
My God.
Well, yeah, but then again, they do play 82 regular season games. So it won't take long for them to sort of get in the groove, I don't think. But you mentioned the NFL. It's interesting you should mention that, Tim and Rick, because watching the Cincinnati Bengals yesterday, who were were vying for the Super Bowl less than a year ago, Joe Burrow has been sacked 13 times in 2 games.
Wow.
You know, Tim, you talk about lack of continuity and lack of practice and all that. This guy is a good young quarterback. He might get killed this season. He's on a pace to get sacked like 110 times, which would be unheard of. But he's been sacked 13 times in 2 games.
I think that's a great point that Tim brought up because, you know, we have our local 24-hour Boston sports stations, and they love to just dwell on everything negative. You put that in perspective, what Tim just said, and it makes sense. They put in a new program, et cetera, and as I was saying to Tim earlier, I did not get to see the game yesterday, but I saw the score, you know, the final, and I said, okay, I don't care what they played like, they won.
That's right, and they did play much better than they did in the first game.
Yeah.
The offensive line held up very well compared to that Cincinnati offensive line, which is giving up sacks like crazy. They held it up for Mac Jones, and Aguilar made one of the great catches you'll ever see for a big touchdown. And defensively, they held the fort in Pittsburgh, which is, you know, obviously traditionally a very, very tough place to play. So I think it's a quality win with the Patriots these days without the superstars like Brady, he'll take any win. It doesn't matter, like you said, Rick, whether it's 17-14 or 6-3.
That's right. Well, there were games like that back in Brady's early years, and so absolutely.
Right.
I want to get back to basketball and then get back to Tim. Did you read the article in the Globe this week, Wick Grossbeck, is that his name, one of the owners?
Yeah, the owner, yes.
What do you make of that?
Well, about the fact that they can tell us what you want when he said to Ayumi Udoka, is that the one you talk about?
Well, yeah, when he talked about, he didn't say lower expectations, but he sort of said lower expectations.
Well, I mean, maybe he's just setting himself up in case the Celtics are disappointing.
Maybe. That's what I thought he was doing. So it was a kind of weird interview.
Yeah. Because I think the fan base, Rick, the paying fans and all those season ticket holders, and they are a hot item in Boston, they're expecting a big season from the Celtics. And why not? Because we mentioned, obviously, that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are heading into their peak years, even though they're only in their mid-20s. And we're talking, you know, a guy like Al Horford still having the goods at his age, 36, will turn 37. We're talking a Marcus Smart, a quality starter. You know, you're going to have a really solid team coming up here. So, you know, in all regards, the bench and starting, and of course, a great fan base that really gets into it. So, I think the expectations should be high because they know they can beat a quality team like the Miami Heat in the playoffs. They know they can beat a quality team like the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs. And to me, those are the two biggest threats to mm-hmm. beat the Celtics in the playoffs. You know, maybe perhaps Philly, if they have a phenomenal year. You know, obviously Joel Embiid is one of the great players in the league and they have some quality talent around him, but not as much as the Celtics have all around.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think Grossbeck's comments were in relationship to a lot of national talk. Because early on, right after the finals, Boston's going to be, you know, one of the favorites to win the title next year, and da 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 da.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the talking head started to level off and say, I don't know, maybe the Celtics may be a little overrated here, you know. And rather than have the team, you know, reacted to all of that, I think he sort of jumped out in front of it and said, listen, he said, you know, we can have great expectations, but we also have to realize that, you know, this is the top league and we're going to have to fight for everything just like everybody else.
Everybody's
been kind of warned of it.
Yeah, no, you're right, Tim. And I think when you look at the top of the Eastern Conference, the teams I just mentioned, Milwaukee, which won the title just 2 years ago, and Miami, which certainly could have been a finalist last year had they beaten the Celtics, you know, those teams are still going to be very, very good. And then who knows what happens with the Brooklyn Nets. If you think Ben Simmons and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are all going to play together, if they do somehow, it would be a miracle. they would be a threat. That's a lot of frontline talent.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many head cases on that team that you kind of don't expect they're going to be there at the end, you know. But they could be a bothersome team if they decide to play together, because they have a very good coach in Steve Nash, but the players don't even listen to him. They just, when you're with Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving, you think you have all the answers.
Yeah, and you think you have all the talent that you can beat people one-on-one, all by yourself.
Right. And they don't have the overall depth, Rick and Tim, that the Celtics have, the Brooklyn Nets. They just don't. So I don't see them as a major threat. I really think it comes down to the Celtics, the Miami Heat, and the Milwaukee Bucks. Don't sleep on the Milwaukee Bucks, because obviously Chris Middleton missed that series against the Celtics last year in the playoffs, and he's a guy who could average 25, 26, 28 points in the playoffs. So they're definitely a threat.
All right. We asked you to do a homework assignment. We asked Gary Larrabee to do it, the Mount Rushmore of interviewees, as we're copying what the Salem News did.
Yeah.
He came up with Gary Player and Arnold Palmer. I know that you have talked glowingly about John Havlicek in the past, so who's on your Mount Rushmore?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you a local guy, Rick. And, Tim, you're going to identify with this. John Tudor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, of Peabody High.
Yep.
Here's the setup, Rick. 1986 playoffs. I get sent to Atlanta for the preliminary series, Celtics against the Atlanta Hawks. Two games and three nights, right? You know how they used to do that? One game, a night off, and then another game. So they're playing like Dominique Wilkins and the guys, and Celtics have a great team in 86. And so Bill Kapouras, the sports editor, sends me out there, and he says, okay, am I going to cover the two games? I get out there, and you figure on the day off between games, that's when you go to practice, and, you know, the player's availability is high. You can talk to anybody on the Atlanta Hawks. You can talk to anybody on the Celtics. So that's what I thought I was going to do on the, quote, off day. But I get a call from the office, and they say, hey, Mike, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals are in Houston. Why don't you go to that game and go talk to John Tudor? Now, the setup on this, Rick and Tim, is that, Tim, you might remember this. 1985, Tudor had one of the greatest seasons in Major League history. He went 21-8, and the thing is, he started the season 1-7, and then he went 20-1 with a 1.37 ERA, and he won playoff games, and then they lost to the St. Louis Cardinals in the World Series 4-3. So he's coming off that fantastic season. So now it's May of the following season, and we're in Houston. So I take I took a cab out to the Houston Astrodome. And I should add at this point that the Houston Astrodome, and we grew up watching games in the Houston Astrodome when it was just built, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a monstrosity of a season, just a monstrosity of a stadium, a horrible place for fans to see a game. So I get out to the ballpark, and, you know, I'm kind of flying, you know, by the seat of my pants because I wasn't ready to do that particular interview. And, you know, but because I had known Tudor so well and I had covered most of his career, and obviously he was coming off that phenomenal 1985 season. I said, okay. So I get there early. I talk to Whitey Herzog, the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, behind the batting cage. Speaks glowingly of Tudor and how he's come back from a strong season. And he went 13-7 that year, 86. So mm-hmm. That's a nice follow-up to his 21-8. And I talked to Tudor. And this is the beauty of it. Tudor, of course, wasn't expecting me to be there. And he says, Mike, what are you doing here? I didn't expect you here. I said, well, the Celtics are playing. And, you know, Bill Kapoor sent me home. He said, okay, great. So he takes me aside, and we talk, I think, for a good 20 to, I think Gary Larry had been mentioning, you know, talking to Arnold Palmer, and Arnold Palmer would have given him extra time. Well, John Tudor, knowing it was myself and talking for the Salem News, he gave me all the time he wanted, you know, that I wanted. And it had to be a good 20 to 30 minutes where we covered the entire journey from his days with the Red Sox and how basically the Red Sox, he was not a John Zimmer favorite because they were looking for Bobby Ojeda and those guys to be the stars of that era, the late 70s. And it turned out Tudor ended up getting traded, and then he ends up with the St. Louis Cardinals. He has one of the greatest years that anybody would have in the National League. So I talked to Tudor at length, and then at the end of the interview, you know, I watched the game. Now, Tudor didn't pitch that night, but I watched the game. And I approached Tudor after the game. I said, hey, John, I'm going to take a cab back to the hotel. And he says to me, no, you're not. I said, what do you mean? He says, you're riding with us, he says. So he grabs me by the collar, basically leads me to the St. Louis Cardinals bus.
Okay? Is that right?
And they were staying, fortunately, they were staying at the same hotel as the Boston Celtics.
Oh, no.
So, bingo, I'm riding with the Cardinals. I'm riding shotgun next to, like, Whitey Herzog and Tudor. And they don't know me from a hole in the wall, the St. Louis Cardinals. But everybody's welcoming and saying hello. And, you know Tudor very well and all that. And they bring me back to the hotel. And I bang out this really long story that night about John Tudor and the journey starting with his Red Sox days leading into the 1985 and then the 1986 season and how great things were going at that point. And it was just one of the most pleasant and lengthiest interviews I had done at that point in my career. And for people who read the Salem News, what a great thing, because John Tudor, Peabody High School, he went to Georgia Southern, he worked his way up through the Red Sox system and became a really strong pitcher in the major leagues. And it was just a really one of my favorite stories to do and definitely one of my favorite interviews because Tudor, on a national level, the national writers did not like him. And he had a reputation of it being a difficult interview. But with us, with myself and Gary Larrabee and Bill Kapouras at the Salem News, he was phenomenal.
I love it.
I can describe him, Tim. I think, you know, he was a phenomenal interview for us. And because I had covered baseball on a regular basis, he got to know me better than anybody else. And it was just a great night to interview John Tudor at the ridiculous Astrodome and then watch the game there and then see him the next day hanging around the pool while the Celtics were getting ready to play the Atlanta Hawks. So that's my story right there.
And that is so cool. Tim.
More of a local interview.
Yeah, that's awesome.
However, a guy with a national reputation who had gone 20-1 with a 1.37 ERA in the 1985 season and was beaten for the Cy Young Award by Doc Gooden of the New York Mets, who went 24-4 with a 1.53 ERA, one of the best seasons in history. And and John Tudor of Peabody, Mass, finished second in the Cy Young voting. Not too shabby.
Not at all.
Right?
Great story. Tim, we got to wrap this up. You got a comment for Mike?
Well, I drank with John Tudor, too. And Mike Torres at the old Four Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Torres was quite a funny guy at times, you know?
I'll tell you. You know, you watch him on TV and you go, okay, you know, he's not that big. Holy shit. He's like 6'5". He could have played linebacker or lineman at that time.
Yeah, he was a tall guy. Yeah, he was,
oh my
he was
God,
a big guy. And on top of the mound, when he was on top of the mound, he was an imposing figure.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, I don't have an assignment for you, but you got to come up with something like that because it makes me these are stories that, like, I used to read in Sport Magazine or Sports, the Sporting News and stuff like that that we don't get anymore because all these interviews now are all boxed and you get, the writers have to get into one room and all write the same thing that the guy says. So we don't get these bios like you do, and I love hearing these stories.
Oh, yeah, and Gary has as many as I do, of course, and it's great. And, you know, one final thought on John Tudor. He won, counting playoffs, he won 121 major league games. There are guys who are considered stars these days in the major leagues who are not even close to 121 career wins. Mm-hmm. And I'll mention one, Jacob DeGrom, maybe the best pitcher in the game today, the New York Mets. He's won like 80 games in his career, and he's 34 years old and all that stuff, and he's considered a generational pitcher. Hey, you know what? John Tudor had a better record at this point in his career.
I bet he had more innings than everybody pitching today, too.
Oh, yeah. Of course, they didn't. You know, guys could really throw 125 pitches and think nothing of it.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, it's just amazing how different everything is now. And at some point, I think we all got to talk about the change in Major League Baseball rules for next year. But we got to concentrate on the Celtics. And so next week, we're a week closer.
We're a week closer at that point. They'll be very close to playing their first. Well, actually, yeah, they will have played their first preseason game at that point.
All right, so we'll get your thoughts then. That's cool. Thanks, Mike.
All right, sounds great, Rick and Tim.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Be well.
Bye-bye now.
All right, that's Mike Grenier, sports writer as well. And, Tim, these are, you know, I don't have anything like that, but I've got to talk and interview some people that I never would have otherwise without doing this. And it is great when you meet people like that, who they're genuine and they just happen to have a gift that people want to watch.
Oh yeah, yeah.
All right, Coach. Anything else you want to mention?
No, and again, once again, just to end as we begin, extending our condolences to the spirit of the Marblehead and Swanson football teams on their tragic losses this past week. And the best of luck to them moving forward.
Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. And I'm going to post some scores. We have some scores in here. I'll throw them up right after we get done and put them up on the website. Field hockey and soccer scores from high school. All right, Tim, thank you very much. Talk to you Friday. We're going up to North Andover, so I'll see you Friday on the ride up there.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, Coach. Talk to you later. All right, that's Tim Kearns. He's our super sports analyst and our ambassador of goodwill. Of course, Bill Newell working on all kinds of stuff for us. He just builds Mr. Everything for us. And lots of information to come here on the website. Plenty more starting tomorrow morning. Plus, again, I'll post these scores here in just a minute. So tell people about us. You can get a hold of us at msonewsports@gmail.com. That's msonewsports@gmail.com. On behalf of Tim Kearns, Bill Newell, and Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Be well.